Okay, thank you very much, Jay. And it's this for me, this is quite a chavaya, quite an experience, given the fact that I am a computer moron, or as my kids call me, an idiot. And I'm I don't know that I'm proud to admit it, but it's, it happens to be true. And here I am looking at myself on a TV screen and looking at a few other people, and it's quite incredible. Jay asked me to give a class tonight on Parshas Vayetze. I think I'm going to speak Ashkenazis, even though when I speak Hebrew, which is, my Hebrew is quite fluent, I speak Sephardit, but it's easier for me to learn in Ashkenazis. It's just the way we learned in the yeshiva, and just that's the way it comes out. So I wanted to touch on several different themes tonight in Parshas Vayetze. I want to begin with Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph and Beis, the story of Yaakov and Rachel, when Rachel realizes that she has not yet conceived children together with Yaakov, and her reaction to it. So it says, "Va'tera Rachel ki lo yolodol Yaakov, v'tkanei Rachel ba'achosa." Rachel saw that she had not born children to Yaakov, and she was jealous of her sister. And she said to Yaakov, "Give me children, and if not, I will die." Yaakov's response is, "Vayicharaf Yaakov Rachel, vayomer hasachas Elohim anochi asher manah mimech pri vaten." Yaakov gets angry at Rachel, and he says, "Am I, instead of God, who has denied you children?" There are two basic approaches to this exchange between Yaakov and Rachel. The first approach is that I'm going to present as the approach that Yaakov actually was inappropriate in his response to Rachel. Rashi is an advocate of this position, and this is the discussion according to Rashi. Rachel says to Yaakov, In last week's parsha, we read, right? Rivka and Yitzchak don't have children, and they pray together, right? The Rashi says she's in one corner, he's in the other corner. They're praying for children. And so Rachel says to Yaakov, "You know, you seem to be disinterested in my fate. Is this how your father behaved himself? Didn't he pray for her?" And then she says, "And if not, I will die." And Rashi says, from here you see that someone who doesn't have children is considered as if they are dead. And Yaakov responds to Rachel, "Hasachas Elokim Anochi, am I instead of God?" And what does that mean? "V'chi b'mkomo ani, am I? Do I replace God? Asher mona minech, who denied you children? Ato meres she'esek abo." You say to me, says Rashi, that I should behave like my father. Ani eini kaba, but I'm not like my father. Aba lo hayu lo banim. My father didn't have children. Ani yesh li banim. I have children. Mimech mana velo mimenu. You were denied children, not me. In other words, the infertility that Yitzchak and Rivka faced, there was no way of knowing. Maybe it was Yitzchak, maybe it was Rivka. Maybe it was male infertility, maybe it was female infertility. Maybe it was a combination. Maybe it was chemistry. It was pH versus acid. A base versus acid, which is one of the issues of infertility. They didn't have children. But I know that I am reproductive. I have children from Leah. So clearly the problem is yours. It's a rather, it would seem to be a rather insensitive answer. And the Ramban says, in fact, Ulefize lomachas Yaakov. Why did Yaakov get angry? Halo tzadikim mispalalim b'yadacherim. Righteous people are supposed to pray for others. Kigon Elisha v'Elio shispalalu b'yad nochrios. Elisha and Elio prayed for non-Jewish people. Yaakov can't pray for Rachel? And if you look at what Yitzchak really did for Rivka, Rashi says, he prayed a lot. He prayed a lot, and he prayed together with her in the same room. And to underscore the position that this was a sin, Rashi's position, I'll quote the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, which is very, very clear. Bereishis Rabbah, Ayin Aleph, paragraph Yud, the Medrash says like this, "Vayichar af Yaakov, Omar lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to Yaakov, Kach onim es hameikos, this is how you respond to someone who's suffering. Chayecha shebonecha asidim la'anov la'amod lefnei benar Yosef. There will be a day when your children will stand before Rachel's son Yosef. What is Rashi referring to? Rashi's referring to, and here I'm going to digress, because I want to show you several examples of this in the Tanakh, and particularly in Sefer Bereishis. What did Yaakov say to Rachel? Hasachas Elokim Anochi. Am I instead of God? You'll recall at the end of Sefer Bereishis, the brothers are very concerned that Yosef is going to take revenge on them because of what they had done in selling him. Once Yaakov died, they're concerned. And so they come to Yosef and they tell him, you know, your father said before he died, he told us, tell Yosef that he should be nice to you and he shouldn't take revenge. And so Yosef gets very upset and he says to the brothers, Hasachas Elokim ani? Am I instead of God? You know, I wouldn't do that. But the point is, the phrase is the exact same phrase. Hasachas Elokim anochi, Hasachas Elokim ani. And it's a kind of biblical justice. Because Yaakov treated Yosef's mother in such a way, the children that Yaakov had from his other wives much more easily than Rachel was able to have children have to stand before Rachel's child and beg her. And the same phrase is used. I'd like to give you a couple of examples where this phenomenon occurs in other places in the Tanakh. One very simple example is in last week's parsha. You know, one of the questions you might ask yourself, I think everyone has to ask themselves. I know that some of the commentaries explain it away, and that's fine. But on the other hand, it's not so easy to explain away. At the end of last week's parsha, Yitzchak decides that he wants to give a blessing to Esav. And he tells Esav to go to the field and to get food for him. And when he brings back the food, Yitzchak is going to give him a blessing. Rivka overhears the discussion, and she begins to plot with Yaakov as to how Yaakov will be able to wrest those blessings from Esav. I'm not going to discuss tonight whether Rivka's actions were justified or not justified, but I will make an observation. And the observation is as follows. When Rivka introduces her plan to Yaakov in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Ches, she says as follows: V'yatov b'ni shma b'koli la'asher ani mitzava osach. Now, my son, listen to my voice, to what I command you. Is that phrase V'yatov b'ni shma b'koli repeat itself anywhere else in Bereishis? And so the answer is yes. It repeats itself in Toledos. And where does it repeat itself in Toledos? I don't know what happened. Okay, I lost the screen for a second. It repeats itself in Toledos in the following case. When Rivka finds out that Esav wants to kill Yaakov, so she says as follows. It says as follows in the Torah. This is in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Membeis. Vayugad l'Rivka as divrei Esav. Rivka b'na hagadol. Rivka hears what her older son Esav wants to do, namely kill Yaakov when Yitzchak dies. Vatishlach v'tikro l'Yaakov b'na hakatan. She calls Yaakov b'na hakatan. But let me just emphasize, not only b'na hakatan, but what is Yaakov to Rivka? Vayehav Rivka as Yaakov, right? V'Rivka ohevis as Yaakov. Rivka loved Yaakov. She calls her son Yaakov. And she says to him, "Vatomrei lav hinei Esav achicha misnachem l'chol l'hargecha. Your brother Esav wants to kill you. V'atov v'nei shma b'koli v'kum brach l'chol elovan achicha rana. And now, my son, listen to my voice, and run to my brother Lavan in Charan." So what does Rivka do? She's forced to send Yaakov away. Does she ever see her beloved son Yaakov again? Is she ever able to send for Yaakov again? The answer is no. So perhaps we might see in the phrase, V'yatov b'ni shma b'koli, when she introduces the plot to take the blessings that were intended for Esav, for Yaakov to do that, perhaps Rivka is getting some form of punishment. And she has to say, V'yatov b'ni shma b'koli, go run away. And this story of Yaakov taking the blessings from Esav comes back to haunt Yaakov in many different ways. We might note the fact that Yaakov takes the blessings from Esav by taking advantage of the fact that Yitzchak can't see. Right? Vayiki Zaken Yitzchak, it says at the beginning of Parashat Zayin, Vatichena Einav Miros, Yitzchak can't see. And how does Yaakov get the blessings? He gets the blessings by putting on a disguise, by putting on Esav's garments. And by virtue of this event, Yaakov is forced to leave his parents for 22 years. Right? He works 7 years for Leah, 7 years for Rachel, 6 more years for Lavan, 2 years of traveling. That's 22 years that Yaakov is away from his parents. Now, if you think about what happens in this week's Parsha, with Lavan. So Yaakov in Perek Chavtes, Pasuk Chav Gimel. What happens? It says as follows: Vayhi ba'era v'yikachas Leah v'itov v'yaveyosa elav v'yavo eleha. Lavan replaces Rachel with Leah in the tent at the time of the wedding. Vayhi ba'boker v'hinei Leah, pasuk chavhei. Vayomer Lavan maza asisa li halo b'rachel ovadati imach v'lama rimitzani. Why did you cheat me? Why did you fool me? Now what did Yitzchak say to Esav when Esav comes home with the food for Yitzchak? He says, Bo achicha b'mirmah. Your brother came in a stealthy way. And b'mirmah is also with Rama'ut, with a measure of deceit, of guile. And now what does Yaakov say to Lavan? Lama rimisani, why did you fool me? And how was Lavan able to fool him? The only way Lavan was able to fool him is because Yaakov couldn't see. It was dark. The electricity wasn't on. It was dark in the tent. In the same way that it was dark for Yitzchak, it was dark for Yaakov. It's a kind of mida keneged mida. And think about this. Go a step further. Does Yaakov lose his son for 22 years? Absolutely. Who does he lose? Yosef. Yosef is taken away from him for 22 years before he's reunited. Yosef is 17 in Parshat Vayeshev when the brothers sell him to Egypt. And it's when Yosef is 39 that Yaakov is reunited with Yosef. And how do the brothers fool Yaakov? How do they fool Yaakov? What's the story they tell him? They take Yosef's clothing, his ketonet pasim. They take the coat of many colors. They cut it up. They dip it in an animal's blood, and they say tarof tarof Yosef. How did Yaakov fool Yitzchak? With clothing. He puts on Esav, the big day chamudos of Esav, those beautiful hairy skins that Esav used to wear when he hunted, and he fools his father that way. And the brothers fool Yosef in the same manner. So you see already just in the text certain things which are indicative of a kind of divine justice without the text telling us that. What does Lavan respond to Yaakov when Yaakov says, Lama zeri misani? Why did you cheat me? And here the Medrash picks up on it. Lavan says, Vayomer Lavan in Pasuk Chavav of Perek Chavtes, Lo yeyoseh kein b'mekomeinu losesis atzirah lufnei habechirah. We know in our place we don't put the younger one ahead of the older one. That might be what you do in the land of Canaan. That might be Minhag Eretz Yisrael. That's what you tried to do with Esav, to jump ahead of him. But here we respect the older sibling. Here Leah goes first, and only later does Rachel, the younger sibling, have her chance to get married. It's a subtle kind of critique of Yaakov. There's another example of that. The other example, which I think is very, very interesting, because the cycle continues. When the brothers come to Yaakov with the garments of Yosef, so what do they say to him? It's in Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Beis, in Bereishis. Vayishalchu es ksonis apasim, vayaviu el avihem, vayomru zos matzanu. Hakerna, hakesonis binchohi imlo. They throw the coat of many colors and they bring it to their father, and they say, this is what we found. Hakerna, recognize it. Is it the garment of your brother or of your son or not? And Yosef, of course, Yaakov says, Vayakira, Vayomer ksonis b'ni chayera achalosu tarof tarof Yosef. Now, who is the main person behind this plan to deceive Yaakov? Whose idea was it to sell Yosef to Egypt? Or to the Yishmaelim who were coming along? Whose idea? It wasn't Shimon and Levi, because Shimon and Levi wanted to kill Yosef. They said, here comes the Balach HaLamos, let's kill him. It wasn't Reuven, because Reuven said, let's throw him into the pit, and he planned to come back later to save him. In the meantime, who is the one who says, let's sell him? It's Yehuda, right? Yehuda is the one who comes up with the plan. The brothers follow Yehuda, and that's why after the sale of Yosef, it's Vayered Yehuda Me'echav. Yehuda goes down because he fell in stature when they saw the terrible thing they had done to their father. But interestingly, the story of Yehuda and Tamar, when Yehuda takes Tamar, who was married to his two older sons, Er and Onan, and they both die, and he promises his third son, Shelah, to Tamar, but then he doesn't plan to keep that promise because he thinks that the boys died because of Tamar, not because of their own sins. And then Tamar realizes that Yehuda is fooling her, so she goes out and she disguises herself as a harlot, and she entraps Yehuda on the crossroads. And they have a one-night interaction with each other, and Yehuda has nothing to pay her with. So she says, give me some security. So he gives her his staff and his ring and his coat, and he said, I'll send you something, and then you'll give it back to me instead of the animal that he sends her. He sends somebody with the animal, but the harlot is gone, and no one can find her. And then later on, he hears that Tamar is pregnant. Now, she's pregnant from him, and Yehuda wants to have her killed, and because she's unfaithful to his son, Shelah, who he never intended to give her to. And so, she's being taken out to be killed, Tamar does the following. He mutseis, it says this in Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Chaf Hei, he mutseis, v'hi shalcha el chamiya le'mor, le'ish asher eile lo anochi hara. She's being taken out to be burned, and she sends to her father-in-law the following. To whomever these things belong, and of course we're talking about the stick, the ring, and the coat, that's the person I'm pregnant from. Batomer, hakerna, lemi hachosemes, hachosemes v'apsilim v'amate ha'ele. Recognize it. To whom does this belong? Vayaker Yehuda v'yomer tzarkam imene. Yehuda recognizes it. It's the exact same language that we had when the brothers showed Yosef, Yaakov, the ksonis pasim. Hakerna, vayaker. So it's again a kind of, Yehuda, you did this thing to your father, you deceived your father, And you told him, recognize the garment, and you forced him to recognize it and to acknowledge something. Now I'm going to force you to recognize something and acknowledge something. It's a form of divine justice. Chazal goes a step further in the Yaakov Esav story. It says in the Torah in Parshas Toledos that when Esav realizes that he was deceived by his brother. So the Torah says that Esav is very, very upset. Esav is very, very upset, and he begins to cry. And but Kishmo Esav, it says this in Perek Chav Zayin Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayitzak Zalka Gedolah Mara Ad Maod. Esav cries a loud and bitter cry. You might recall that Esav's grandson, great great grandson, many years later, decides that he wants to kill the Jewish people. And he conceives a plot. His name is Haman in Megillat Esther. He conceives a plot, and he gets the king, Ahasuerus, to sign a decree to destroy all the Jews. And Mordechai's great-grandson, and Yaakov's great-grandson, Mordechai, Yoda es kol asher na'asot, it's the fourth parak in the Megillah, So Esav it says, Mordechai says, and Chazal are the ones who comment that because Mordechai's great-great-grandfather Yaakov caused Haman's great-great-grandfather Esav to cry loud and bitter tears, therefore there was a punishment that was given, and the great-great-grandson of Yaakov, namely Mordechai, will be caused to cry loud and bitter tears by the great-great-grandson of Esav, namely Haman. So you see in the Bible in general that there is a kind of biblical justice, a kind of divine justice, rather, which is written into the text. You see it over and over again. And the example that led me to comment on it is Yaakov's Hasachas Elokim Anochi, which, if translated in the negative way, was a mean comment by Yaakov. It was an insensitive comment by Yaakov to Rachel, and therefore later on, Rachel's son, Yosef, says Hasachas Elokim Ani to the other children of Yaakov. But then there's a totally other perspective on this story. And the other perspective on this story is that Yaakov did not sin. That Yaakov, in fact, tried to do something which was right. And you find this perspective in three different interpretations. One is the Ramban. The Ramban says that Rachel biksha, she requested that Yaakov pray for her, ad she Hashem yitein lo banim, until God gives her children. Otherwise, she threatens, acheres he tamus min hatzar, she's going to die from pain. And the Ramban says, elufizeh, divra shelo kahogen bekinasa, she spoke inappropriately in her jealousy. V'chashpo she Yaakov yilbash sak ve'efer v'yispalel ad she yulo banim. She thought that Yaakov would put on sackcloth and ashes until she has children. And Yaakov said to her, right, that you got it all wrong. That's not the way prayer works. I can't possibly do that. I could ask God, but I can't demand of God that he give you children and absolutely guarantee their success. And that's what Rachel wanted from him. And Yaakov said it was an unfair request. And that's what Yaakov was responding. I'm not God. Only God can give you children. I can't give you children. And the Ramban gives another possibility, that Yaakov really did pray, but God said no. And Rachel came with complaints. She said, what kind of prayer did you do? You didn't do the right kind of prayer. You know, if you really wanted to be successful in prayer, you could be successful like your father was successful in prayer. Didn't Rivka have children as a result of Yitzchak's praying? So why can't I have children as a result of your praying? Of course, Yaakov's response is that, my dear wife, you're wrong. Because God is only a shomea tefillah. God hears prayers. He doesn't always say yes to us. That's the Ramban. That the debate between Yaakov and Rachel was not an insensitive debate on Yaakov's part. In fact, the expectations of Rachel were unrealistic. She wanted Yaakov to do what he was incapable of doing. Namely, to guarantee the efficacy of his prayer. He couldn't do that. The Radak says that Rachel was out of line because she said to Yaakov, Havali banim, give me children. Tosa hakoch bo v'lo b'Hashem. She said, you are the one who gives children, not God. And there is a medrash which says, Mipnei ma niknasa Rachel, why was she further punished? Because she hishvisa hatsur liyotzra. She compared the creature to the creator, namely Yaakov being the creature, the created one of God, and she thought that Yaakov could do what God could do, and of course Yaakov could not do what God could do. According to one of the commentaries later on in Parshas Chukas, that was the Chet of Moshe, where Moshe and Aaron says to the Bnei Yisrael when they wanted water, Hamin haSela hazeh notzi lochem mayim, will we draw water from this well? He should have said, according to one of the interpretations, Hamin haSela hazeh yotzi Hashem lochem mayim. He should have said that God will give you water. He sort of gave himself the credit for being able to extract water from the rock, when in fact it's only God that can extract water from rocks. Human beings cannot extract water from rocks. And finally, another interesting interpretation that I found is found in the works of Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, he's the Akedas Yitzchak. In fact, just a historical side note, there are those who claim that the Abarbanel plagiarized from the Akedas Yitzchak in some of his commentary on Chumash. I'm not one to judge. But the Rav Yitzchak Arama, who was a Spanish scholar, says the following, that Isha, the female, has two biblical names. One name is Isha. Isha is like the word Ish. There's an Ish who's a male. Isha is a female. But the word Isha, just like the word Ish, has no reference at all to the concept of children. All it means is that there are two genders of human beings. There's a male human being and there's a female human being, and it has no connection with children. It's just two people, Homo sapien, with koach hadibur, right? Vayhi adam lenefesh chaya, with a mind to think, with a cerebral cortex, with the ability to be creative, to be a partner with God, and making the world a better place. That is one concept of one name that's given to the female. The other name is Chava. She was called Isha ki mi ish lukacha. She was called Isha because she was taken from man. But she's also called Chava. Why is she called Chava? Because she's Ein Kol Chai. She's the mother of all life. And the term Chava, it refers to the part that the woman plays in bearing children. She's the one who carries the baby. It's from her womb that the baby comes forth. She's the mother of life. And so Rachel's argument was that the main purpose in life of the female is to be Chava, is to be a mother. And Yaakov saw being an Isha as the main purpose in life. In other words, even if you don't have children, it doesn't mean that your life is meaningless, right? Your life could be meaningful. You could have Yad Vashem, Tov Mi Bonim Ubi Bonos. You can contribute to the world and you can have a meaningful life. And so the debate between Yaakov and Rachel was a philosophical debate. What is the place of a human being on this earth? Is a human being's primary place on this earth to bear children? Does everyone have to be a father or a mother? Or does a human being have a role to play even if they are not a father or a mother? Actually, the Hamek Davar, the Nitziv, and others say about Sarah, Vayu Chayei Sarah, Me'or Shana, Ve'Srim Shana, Ve'Sheva Shanim, right? This is the very beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah, right? Shnei Chayei Sarah. So we generally translate that to be the years of the life of Sarah. The Nitziv says otherwise. Shnei Chayei Sarah, the two lives of Sarah. Vayihu is Begimatria, the number Vayihu is Begimatria, the numerical value, the numerology, is 37. Sarah lived according to the Chazal's interpretation. She bears Yitzchak at the age of 90, right? And she dies at the age of 127. Well, that's in the Torah, that she dies at the age of 127. So 37 years, she's a mother to Yitzchak. So the Shnei Chayei Sarah, the two lives of Sarah. Until she was 90, she had the life of being the wife of Abraham, of being Sarah, of being Abraham's partner in bringing monotheism to the world and chesed to the world. And then for the last 37 years, she played the role of being mother to Yitzchak. But her first 90 years were also meaningful. And so Yaakov said to Rachel, listen, you think Chava is the most important role, and I'm telling you that Isha is a very, very important role. And if you can't be Chava, you should still try to be Isha to the best of your ability. So that concludes that part. This part of the class. And now I want to go to another subject. And the other subject that I want to go to is as follows.
Can I interject for a moment?
Absolutely. By all means.
I was just going to comment on the last thing of, the role of the woman, the philosophical argument. So the Torah, of course, gives no indication who's more correct.
That is correct over there. That according to the that was the debate. That was the argument. Maybe the Torah does give an answer, because ultimately Rachel is giving children. So maybe maybe God is a better politician than all of us. Basically, he says to Yaakov, "Du bist gerecht," and to Rachel, he says, "Du bist gerecht." You're both right, Rachel. You do have a role to play. You'll wait a little bit longer. And you'll teach people the ability to pray even more when she has naftali, naftule elokim niftalti. I pray to God, and eventually, if you pray hard enough, maybe God will respond. If you go to the fertility clinics and you try to find the right doctors, and you don't give up, maybe eventually you'll get good results. And if that doesn't work, maybe you'll adopt children. The idea of using Bilha as a kind of surrogate mother and giving you the joy of raising children in another way, you have to do hishtadlus. And, you know, and it is important to have children, you know, whether it's your own biological children or whether it's done enough tully. So, but I, you know, the Torah doesn't specifically, it's not as clear as the part where the punishments that I spoke about before. All right, now I want to reflect on one other thing. And this is my own thought, and I can't prove that I'm right here. I don't have any commentaries to back me up, except for the author of the Haggadah. So what happens? Yaakov works for Lavan, and Lavan tries his very, very best to cheat Yaakov and to take advantage of him. It reaches a point when Yaakov finally is able to get his a fair payment by using a measure of guile. And then what happens is that the sons of Lavan in Perek Lamed Aleph start speaking negatively about Yaakov, and Yaakov hears these words. And he also sees that Lavan's face is einenu imo kismol shelshom. It's not like it was, like it used to be. And then God tells Yaakov, you know, you better go back, and I'll be with you. Now, that should be enough for Yaakov to say, okay, I'm going. But that's not what happens. What Yaakov does is, Vayishlach Yaakov, this is Pasuk Dalet of Perek Lamed Aleph, Vayikro l'Rachel l'Leah ha'sodeh el-tzono, Vayomer lehen, Roe anochi es p'nei avichen, ki einenu elai kismol shelshom, Ve'elokei avi hayo imadi, and he says, you know, your father is not the same with me, and God has been with me, and he's cheated me. And finally, Yaakov tells them, "Vayomer elai malach Eloho Elokim." This is Pasuk Yud Aleph. "Vachalom Yaakov Omar Hineni." Vayomer Sono Einecho Rei. See all the whatever you have. Anochi Akel Beitel Asher Roshachta Sham Atzeva Asher Nadar Telisham Neder Atokum Tzei Min Aretz Azos Rishuv El Eretz Malatecha. God told me to go home. And the women say, you know, we really have to go. And Yaakov leaves without saying a word to Lavan. What happened that made Yaakov so desperate to get out of there after spending the 20 years there that he did? Suddenly, because Lavan looks differently at him, I mean, he knows Lavan has been cheating him, but he's gotten around it, and God has taken care of him. God promised him that he would take care of him. What's happened now? What does Yaakov see in Lavan's face? So I have my own interpretation over here, and it's based on the following. At the end of Parshas Chayesara, the Torah tells us that that Abraham, at the end of his life, is blessed with everything. Perek Chaf Dalet Pasuk Aleph, it says, V'Avraham Zokein Bova Yamin V'Hashem Be'Rachatz Avraham Bakol. Avraham is blessed with Bakol, with everything. And then we're told that after Yitzchak marries Rivka, that and Avraham marries Keturah. So it says in Parakhav Hey, Pasuk Hey, Vayitain Avram is Kalasher Loli Yitzchak. Avram gives all that is his to Yitzchak. Vilivnea Pilakshim Asher Avraham, the son Avraham Matanos, Vayishalchem Al Yitzchak Benobo, Denuchai Kedla Laris Kedim. And to the children of the Pilakshim, I assume Yishmael, and the children of Keturah, Avram gives Matanos. He gives gifts and he sends them away. So the question is like this. If Avraham Nosan is Kol Asher Lo LiYitzchak, what does that mean? Avraham gave everything that he has to Yitzchak. So what does Kol mean? What does everything mean? Everything means everything. If you give everything to Yitzchak, you have nothing left to give to the Bnei HaPilakshim. There are no matanos to give because you gave everything to Yitzchak. It doesn't make any sense. So this question clearly bothered Rashi. And what did Rashi do with it? Rashi says that what Avraham gave to Yitzchak is not material gifts, it's not gashmius, it's rather the ability to bless others. V'heyei bracha. That's what he gave Yitzchak. Kol asher lo is v'heyei bracha. What did he give to the Pilakshim? What did he give to the Bnei HaPilakshim? Gifts that he had gotten from other people, gifts that he had gotten from Avimelech, gifts that he had gotten from Paro, gashmius. But to Yitzchak, he gave the capacity of v'heyei bracha. How does Rashi know that? So I think that Rashi knows that from the following. When does Avraham get the blessing of Ehyeh Bracha? Avraham gets the blessing of Ehyeh Bracha at the beginning of Lech Lecha. It says at the beginning of Lech Lecha, Va'avarcha mevarachecha, Ve'etzchol ha'goy gadol, this is Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis, Ve'etzchol ha'goy gadol, Va'avarechecha va'gadlo shmecha ve'ehyeh bracha, you shall be a blessing, Va'avarcha mevarachecha, I will bless those who bless you, U'mekalelcha o'or, and I will curse those who curse you, V'nivrachu v'cho kol goyei haaretz, all the nations of the world will be blessed with you. So what do you have in that phrase, V'nivrachu v'cho kol goyei haaretz? You have the word kol. You will be a blessing to everyone. And so the Avram Zalkein bought by Yamim, Vashem Beirachas Avram Bakol. What did God bless Abraham with? Ve'ye Bracha. The capacity, that promise was fulfilled. Ve'yitain Avram is Kol Asher Lo Yitzchak. What's Kol? Ve'ye Bracha. V'nibruchu Bracha Kol Goye Haaretz. But it goes beyond that. The Bracha of Kol is also something else. All right? Listen to this. Lot separates from Avraham. Vashem amar al Avraham, acharei pared Lot meimo, sono einecho re'ei min ha-makom asher atah sham, tzafonu benegba v'kena v'kedmo v'yama, ki es kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh, l'cho etneno l'zarecha ad olam. The other part of bracha, the bracha of kol, is Eretz Yisrael. Es kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh. Now, that is not a figment of my imagination. In Parshas Toledos, God says to Yitzchak the following. He says, "Al teirid Mitzrayim." This is Perek Chavav. Shchon ba'aretz asher omar elecha, gur ba'aretz ezos ve'yem imcha, ba'avarcha ki l'chol ezarcha etein es kol ha'aratzos ha'el. I will give all kol ha'aratzos ha'el to your children. V'nosati l'zarachos kol ha'aratzos ha'el, v'zbarachu v'zaracha kol goyei ha'aretz. All the nations of the world will be blessed with your children. So now, if this is correct, that the bracha of kol, which Avram had, is Eretz Yisrael and v'heyei bracha, so we understand one thing, that Avraham, when he had to pick an heir for his most precious metaphysical possessions, namely, the schus of Eretz Yisrael, which is a metaphysical possession, because it means Avodas Hashem, it means a Beis HaMikdash, and it also means the capacity to be a light unto the nations and to bring blessing to the world. If he had to choose between Yitzchak and all his other children, he had only one child from the wife who was his wife of destiny, and that was Sarah. So it was clear that Yitzchak was going to get it, even though Avram struggles with that in Parshas Vayera. But Yitzchak gets it. But Yitzchak has a problem, because Yitzchak is blessed with two children from his wife of destiny, right? He's blessed with two children from his wife of destiny, who's Rivka. And so Yitzchak struggles. And you know what Yitzchak decides to do? Yitzchak decides to split the bracha. And he's going to give one bracha to Esav and one bracha to Yaakov. What bracha is he going to give to Esav? Well, what bracha is he going to give to Yaakov first? Let's try that. That's easier. At the end of Toledos, it says, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, Vayivarach azo. Vayitaveyu Vayomer lo losikach isham ibnos kanan. Kum lech paden aram besa b'sual avi emecha, v'kachacha misham ibnos wavarach emecha. V'kel shaday yivarechosko v'yafcha v'yivrecha v'yitza l'kal amin. V'yitain lecha es birchaz Avraham lecha l'zaracha itach. L'rishtacha es eretz megurecha asher nosana l'kim l'avram. So what does Yitzchak readily give to Yaakov? Eretz Kanan. Just marry the right wife, and you get Birchas Avraham to inherit the land of Canaan. What did Yaakov want to do? What did Yitzchak want to do? He wanted to give Esav the bracha of Yitain L'cho HaElokim Yishmanei Haaretz, right? That was the bracha that Yaakov wrests from Esav with the disguise. So what does it say over there? Yitain L'cho HaElokim, this is Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Ches. Yitain L'cho HaElokim Yital HaShemayim U'Mishmanei Haaretz Barov Dagon V'Tirosh. Whatever it is, this is all the blessings of Gashrius. And then what does he say? He wants to give Esav, He wants to give Esav a bracha. But Rivka understood one thing. And this was the brilliance of Rivka. She understood that the bracha was, what is the bracha called? It's called kol. What does kol mean? Everything. If you split kol in half, it's not kol anymore. And she understood that the bracha of kol belongs to Yaakov. And so, therefore, Rivka desperately, realizing that Yitzchak is going to try to split between the two sons that they had together, the bracha of kol, she desperately tries to wrest the bracha away. And Yitzchak realizes that she was right. And that's why it says, Vayecharad Yitzchak haradah gadolah. When Esav comes home, and he says, you know, your brother came in, and our varachayu, and I blessed him. This is Pasuk Lamed Gimel of Perek Chav Zayin. Gam baruch yehiyeh. The bracha stays with him. I made a mistake. I was going to split the bracha. I can't do it. It's not the bracha of kol anymore. Your mother was right, or whoever. He was right. I have to give him everything. And then Esav says, you have something for me? He says, sure, I'll give you. And he gives Esav gashmius. But he doesn't give him mevarachecha baruch. It's very, very interesting then. Esav never gives up on it. And in next week's parsha, in parsha's Vayishlach, when Yaakov comes back from Lavan, so he sends to Esav a message. Right, the beginning of parsha's Vayishlach. I have all this stuff. Listen, the Gashmi is part of Yitain L'chai Elokim, you can have. In fact, the Rav once gave a whole big shir on that, how Yaakov gives back the Gashmi, but that's not for now. You can have the shor, the tzon, the eved, the shivcha, you can have all the wealth that I got. So Esav says to Yaakov, if you recall, when they as they meet, Esav says to Yaakov, Mi l'cha kol ha-machane azer sher pokashti. What is this camp? That I met this whole camp, and so Yaakov says to Esav, this is Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Ches, and Pasuk Yaakov says to Esav, Lim Tzochein De'Enei Adoni, it's for you, it's a gift. So what does Esav say to Yaakov? Vayomer Esav, Yesh Li Rav, I have a lot, I don't need, I'm a rich man. Yaakov says, no, you don't understand. But Yom Yaakov, Alma, don't push me. Im nomo tzasi chen b'enecha v'lachachta min chasi, ki al kein roisi p'enecha karos p'nei elokim v'tirtzeni, take my gift. Kach no esbir chasi asher huvas lach, ki chanani elokim v'chiyesh li kol. God has been good to me. I have kol. And in case you have any notion that I could share that with you, I can't share it with you. And so Esav says, you know, let's travel together. Yaakov says, no deal. There's no sharing. Esav says, let me put some representatives with you. No deal. And there's a very interesting Ramban at the end of Vayishlach. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Aleph and Beis. Ve'ela told us Esav hu Edom. Esav lo kachas nashav yivnos kanahan. Es ora vas elon achiti v'salivama, etc., etc. And Pasuk Vav, Vayikach Esav is Nashavis, Bonavis, Benosavis, Kol Nafshos, Beisavis, Mekneu, Beskol Behem Tovis, Kol Kinyano, Asher Achash, Eretz Kanan, Vayelech El Eretz Mipnei Yaakov Achiv. He leaves Eretz Kanan because of his brother Yaakov. Says the Ramban, Esav had two addresses. One address was Arzah Seir Steadom. That was his business address. That's where he had his 400 men, and that's where he did whatever he did. But where did he keep his family? In Eretz Kanan. And when you keep your family as your main address, because your family is the most important thing in the world. Why did he keep his family in Eretz Kanan? Because he was always hoping that Yaakov somehow wouldn't come back. He only takes his family out of Eretz Kanan and moves to Har Seir with his family when Yaakov returns. Why? Because then when Yaakov returned, Esav understood that kol was indivisible. Now let me get back to Lavan. You know, the way we view Lavan, generally speaking, is Lavan is a grandfather. He's a conniver. He probably loves his children and his grandchildren. He wants to take as much advantage as possible of Yaakov. But that's it. We don't see Lavan as a very bad guy. We just see him as a dishonest guy, you know, the ultimate crook. He'll even take advantage of his children, his grandchildren, to make a buck. That's not how Yaakov saw him. Yaakov, when he saw that Lavan's face changed, he realized that there was a new Lavan. And he saw a great danger in Lavan. What he saw in Lavan was a desire to keep his family there and to somehow wrest more than the sheep away from his family. He realized that if he was going to stay a day longer with Lavan, there was a chance that his family might assimilate and might fall into the trap of becoming too much a part of the society of Haran. And I want to tell you who I think says that thought. It's the author of the Haggadah. But the author of the Haggadah translates Arami Oved Avi in Parshas Kisavo, right? Arami Oved Avi to mean an Aramite wanted to destroy my father. Who is the Aramite according to Rashi? Over there, Lavan. Lavan wanted to destroy my father Yaakov. What does the Baal Haggadah say? Say Ulamad. Ma bikesh Lavan harami lasos li Yaakov avinu. Sheparo lo gazar elo al hazacharim. The Lavan bikesh la'akoras hakol. So it's an incredible statement by the author of the Haggadah. Paro lo gazar, Paro only made a decree against the firstborn, and Lavan wanted to uproot everything. I mean, Paro, the way the Baal Haggadah has it is that Lavan is worse than Paro. Paro murdered Jewish children. Kol ha'yibein ha'yilot ha'yorot ha'shlichu. Doesn't it say that at the beginning of Shmos? All the children that are born, throw them into the river. Drown the Jewish children. Isn't that what Paro wanted? He was a murderer. According to the Medrash, he bathed in the blood of Jewish children when he became he had leprosy. So how is Lavan worse than Paro? So the answer is that there's a fate worse than death. I mean, and who knows that better than the Jewish people? The Jewish people who over the centuries were Moser Nefesh, Al Kiddush Hashem, they gave up their lives rather than worshiping idols or rather than doing certain other things. Right? The Jewish heroes of all times said that there are things that are more important than life. Look, all the soldiers who died for the state of Israel. What do they go? They go to the battlefield. What do they go to the battlefield? Because there are things that are more important than my own life. My destiny is more important than my life. Love on bikesh la'akoros hakol. What does hakol mean? He wanted to make sure Yaakov would never go back to Eretz Canaan. He wanted to make sure that Yaakov would never be a v'heye bracha. He would never have birchas Avram. That's hakol. Love on bikesh la'akoros hakol. He wanted to uproot what? The bracha of kol. The bracha of kol is the birchas Avram. A v'heye bracha. And Eretz Canaan, Lazarachu Atenas Kol Haratzos Ha'el. And so when it comes out in reading this parasha, we could read that story very, very differently. When Yaakov sees that Pnei Lavan are not the same as they were, he suddenly realizes that, you know, I've been looking at my father-in-law as just a crook, a plain old crook who wants to squeeze me for everything. But essentially, he loves my family, he loves my children, he wants the best for them. I made a big mistake. Now I realize what Lavan is all about. What Lavan is all about is he wants us to stay here because he wants us never to get back there to Israel. He wants us never to realize our destiny. He wants us never to become what we're supposed to become. The Lavan bikesh la'akoros hakol. Lavan wanted to uproot everything. That's what the Baal Haggadah says. And I think in light of the analysis, you can see it, I think, pretty clearly in the psukim as well. Okay, so it's about 9:50 now, and Jay told me to stop at 9:50. And so I stopped. If anyone has any questions...
For question and answer period.
That's right. I'm stopping for questions and answers.
Okay, very good.
Okay, I see some nice smiles on some people's faces. I guess everyone's happy that the class is over.
Rabbi Billet?
Yes?
This is Judah Isaacs, and I'm wondering if you could comment, just in general, on why Yitzchak gave the bracha so much earlier than before his death?
That's a good question. It is so much earlier because we know that Yitzchak lived through the entire period that Yaakov was by Lavan, and when Yaakov came back, he saw his father Yitzchak. I don't have a good answer except to say that perhaps Yitzchak saw that his senses, I don't mean his seichel, I mean, you know, his vision is going. He saw old age setting in, and the truth is he didn't really know what was going to be. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a good answer. Did the Avos know when they were going to die? I mean, I know there's a tradition that each of the Avos was supposed to live 180 years. And, you know, and Avram was shortened by 5 years, And Sarah was also supposed to live 180 years, but for some reason she because of some hate, she was shortened 53 years, right? But beyond that tradition, I mean, I remember with my father used to say to me, my father Lo Shalom, say, listen, he would call me in when he was in his 60s. He said, listen, I don't know how long I'm going to live. I want you to know that when I leave this world, I'm going to leave this world like all Basar Madam. I want you to take care of your mother. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. And I would just like to think that Yitzhak knew that at some point, maybe Yitzhak was a good estate planner. He understood that you have to plan well in advance. You can't wait for the last minute to write a will. You wait for the last minute to write a will, you might not be able to write the will. So maybe on a certain level he wanted to avoid machlokas. It's not the way it worked out, of course, but he wanted to avoid machlokas. He wanted to divide the spoils early on in life. He wasn't giving anything specific away then, because he was still around and Rivka was around, but he wanted each son to know what exactly his role would be. Who knows? You know, aren't we supposed to think that every minute is a second before we're going to die? So maybe that's how Yitzhak thought. If you're looking for a better answer, which I think you are, I don't have one. You know, I like to tell the story. They say that, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who was the Rav of Kovna, and also, by the way, was the author of the Heter Mechira, the first Heter Mechira that they had for selling the land to Arabs in the Shemitah year, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, they say he was such a great rabbi. You know why Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was a great rabbi? Because they once asked Rav Yitzchak Elchanan a question, and he said, I don't know. So I always say I'm greater than Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, because people ask me lots of questions, and I say many times, I don't know. So, your question is perhaps better than the answer I gave, but that's the best I could do. Any other questions?
Yeah, just on your point on love and, B.K. Shlakor Bakor, which you're really saying, of course, that he wasn't worse than Paro, and Bakor refers to the Fraka of Bakor.
No, I'm saying he was worse than Paro.
Paul Haggadah doesn't say that. I like what you say. I think it makes a lot of sense. It fits in beautifully with...
No, I'm saying Lavan was worse than Paro.
The Baal Haggadah doesn't say that. Shapar Bikesh, whatever, Haskari. The Lavan, wants to everybody. The Haggadah actually takes it further than he mamish was worse.
No, I think the Baal Haggadah is saying, Tzeu Lamad, go out and see. Ma bikesh Lavan Arami lasos liYaakov Avinu. What did Lavan want to do? Sheparo lo gazar elo hazcharim. Paro only wanted to kill the males. But Lavan bikesh laakar sakol. It was much worse. Lavan was much worse than Paro, because Lavan bikesh laakar sakol. He wanted to uproot everything. And what I'm saying hakol is the destiny of the Jewish people. And I'll tell you something else. I have another pshat, which is my own pshat. What does it mean tzeu lamad? Go out and see. So I think that Tzeu Lamad is a very, very important statement. And I'll preface it with a famous saying in Pirkei Avos. You know, the Pirkei Avos says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five great Talmidim. Right? Five of the greatest Tanaim were the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And he goes to his Talmidim and he says, Tzuru, go out and see. Ezu derech yishara shivor lo ha'adam. Go out and see. Now, if I was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I think what I would have done to my five great students, I would have said, you're my greatest graduate students. Kinsu u-ru-u. Go into the Beis Medrash, take out your Svarim, or take out your Bar Ilan disk and put it on the computer, and do a research paper for me on what the right way a person should live his life in the world. But what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? He says, Su-ru. You know, it's one thing to be in the Beis Medrash, but if you don't know what the real world is about, the Beis Medrash doesn't mean you have to know how to apply the Beis Medrash to the real world. So I want you to go out in the real world and you go figure it out. Go see what it's like in the real world and then give people some good advice using your knowledge but also using your wisdom of the world. And so the author of the Haggadah says, Tzeu Lamad, go out and see. Because if you're going to go in the Beis Medrash, you're definitely going to say that Paro was worse than Lavan. Because that's what it says in the Chumash. But so the author of the Haggadah says, listen, you want to be smart about the world, you have to understand that people have motives, and what looks to be innocent is not so innocent. I'm telling you that if you look at the reality, Lavan was worse than Paro. Say Ulamad, go out into the world and look at what people's motives are all about. Ma bikesh Lavan harami lasos liYaakov Avinu. Right? You know, I'll say, Tzeulamad, go out into the world and recognize that Mahmoud Abbas is Hamas with the suit and the tie. There's no difference between Abbas and the people of Hamas. Tzeulamad, don't believe all the things that they tell you. Right? And that's exactly the point. Tzeulamad, go see, Lavan was worse than Paro. That's what the author of Haggadah says. Any other questions? You let me off the easy. All right, if there are no other questions, then Jenny, I'm going to cheat you.
If you want
and
to
I'm going
to
leave 3 minutes early. Okay.
Yaakov, take a look at the screen below.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so, Blair, so why didn't Hashem punish Lavan? One second. I have to go all the way to the top. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not good at this. Okay. Blair in Toronto, does this relate to Rachel's stealing of the idols? Does what
why,
relate to Rachel's stealing of the idols?
Why did it take 20 years to see this in Lavan? That's one. And why did Hashem punish Lavan the way he punished Paro?
One second. So there is a medrash which I maybe explains this. There's a medrash that says that Lavan is Bilam. Lavan is Bilam. Now we know that Lavan isn't Bilam, right? But there's a medrash that says that Lavan is Bilam. What does it mean? Maybe it means that if you really want to know what Lavan's end is, it was very similar to the ending of Bilam. How did Bilam leave the world in a very ignominious way, right? At the end of the sword. And maybe it means that Lavan lost everything. He lost his children and his grandchildren. What could be a worse punishment to Lavan than that? To lose everything. He never saw his you know, there's a medrash that says that Bilhah and Zilpah were also his daughters. He never saw his four daughters again, and he never saw their children. And it was probably the children, the grandchildren, that he would have gotten the greatest nachas from. Now, Blair has a question. Does this relate to Rachel's stealing of the idols? I don't know what this is. What do you mean by that? Can Blair talk?
That was much earlier in the Shir. That relates to a much earlier point in the Shir when you were talking about with Yaakov writing and criticizing like Rachel, and she was punished later on.
It had nothing to do with the stealing of the idols. Yeah, and I remember Judah Isaacs. Yes, I remember you very well, Judah, and I remember your mother. So you're saying it took Yaakov 20 years to see this in Lavan. Yeah, Blair, that's what I'm saying. It took Yaakov 20 years to see it in Lavan. That's why it says that Yaakov saw that Lavan's face changed. It took him 20 years. Maybe the first 14 years he was working so hard to get those wives that he didn't see it. And maybe the last 6 years he was working so hard to make money that it was a chisar in Yaakov. He was so driven to make that money, and he didn't see the trap that he was falling into. And then suddenly he realized it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Correct. Any other questions?
All right, Rabbi, I know you have a 10 o'clock meeting, so I will...
No, Jay, I have to be there by 10:10.
I wish you a good Shabbos. Those of you who live in Toronto, first note that Rabbi Billy will be joining us for our retreat the end of February. Saturday night is Midnight Medrash with Rabbi Liebpack. Sunday morning, Dr. Finkelman is giving a shiur on Tamei Amitzvot, and Rabbi Haman starting his marsh here. Have lots of stuff going on online, and I want to wish everybody a good Shabbos and thank Rabbi Phillips.
I want to thank you. It was so nice to meet you all on the computer. You know, Charles.
One better than the next. Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.
Charles Osgood used to say, "See you on the radio." It was nice to see you on the computer. Okay, this was very interesting. Thank you, Jay, for the opportunity. Okay, good Shabbos, everybody.
Okay.
I'm happy A-Rod is still a Yankee. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.